to Moms Unbothered, the show where we ditch the toxins, trust our instincts, embrace a healthy lifestyle, and don't care who it bothers. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Kate.
And this episode is all about what we did to prepare for postpartum, breastfeeding, and navigating a really hard situation. You'll hear all about things we would do again and things we wouldn't, how we took two very different approaches and had two very different outcomes. And we will be crying. So before we get into this, if you love conversations that challenge the status quo and help you level up your health, take 2 seconds to hit that like button, subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, or leave a quick review if you're a podcast listener. It helps more moms like you find this podcast. And let's be real, the more of us out there, the less we have to explain why we don't let our kids eat McDonald's. I also want to add a little trigger warning. I do get a little graphic when talking about a miscarriage. So if that is something that is too hard for you to listen to, it's at the end. So yeah, that is there. Also, additionally, I wanted to add, this has been keeping me up thinking about it. 2 things that we talked about on this podcast. One, Mary Kate mentioned how she pumped and the first like 3 months her nipples were cracked and bleeding and really painful. And I don't want that to scare anybody because that's not really normal. So get some help if that's happening. That should not be happening to you. And additionally, I talked about how I felt alone during my miscarriage, but I had told everybody I was pregnant. So I think if you're waiting till 12 weeks, don't feel like you have to, because I couldn't imagine having to tell people that I was pregnant and then I had the miscarriage. So I'm really glad I had told people that I was pregnant so that they could be there for me to support me. So that's this episode.
Welcome back to another episode. We are going to be talking about postpartum, breastfeeding. Jordan is going to tell us a story about her miscarriage she had before her daughter. So we're really just going to get into a bunch of different topics. So get ready.
All right. Well, we probably had two very drastically different postpartum experiences. So do you want to share a little about yours?
Yeah.
And did you do anything to prepare?
Prepare for postpartum?
Yeah.
No. Okay, you guys, I had my baby and I quickly noticed we went home 2 days after birth. I did hospital birth. And I quickly noticed that my family was there, Chase's family was there. Everyone took about a week to like on and off help us. After that week, everyone went back to work. Chase went back to work. And it was just like me and this newborn and my poor mental health and my second degree tear.
No.
It was the worst experience of my life. I've never felt more lonely. I remember like I would hear my son's dad leaving in the morning. So we lived in an apartment at the time. I would hear him leave for work. And when I would hear the door close to the apartment, like he was leaving, this just impending doom would just like wash over me. And I would be like, oh my gosh, I'm here alone with a baby. I have no idea what to do. Like, yeah, I wasn't taking care of myself, guys. I didn't know to like meal prep. I didn't know to have freezer meals. I was literally just counting down the clock. I would pack up the baby, pack up all my pump stuff. We would go sit at my mom's house and my dad would come home every day at lunch at noon. And so like I would just be waiting for the text of like, okay, I'm on my way home for lunch. Or like my dad would text me and be like, throw in a frozen pizza and let's have pizza together. Like, and that was just my hour where I could like see other humans, and then he would go back to work, and then I would have to wait until 4 or 5 p.m. until either Chase got home or my mom got home. And yeah, it was horrible. And I felt guilt of like, I should be cleaning. I should, like, dishes would be piled up and laundry would be need to be done. But I don't know how other moms felt, but for the first like month, I felt like I couldn't even walk because I was so sore down there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I did absolutely nothing. I think I wore maybe like those little tux pads for like a week. And then I think I ran out and I was just like, when you're really poor, it's like I just didn't want to buy more because it was like, that's just another thing I have to be buying. So I just didn't buy those anymore. And yeah, my postpartum experience was horrible, but I'm sure, if I would have known, if I would have prepared, it could have been a completely different. So I don't want to scare anyone. Like that was, I just was so uneducated. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know any of the tips or tricks and things. So yeah, it was really bad. But one thing I did get right was, and we're going to talk about this later, is breastfeeding. Well, actually I got it wrong because I didn't know how to latch bear it. I was really uneducated and I paid for like a lactation consultant to come to the apartment and she did, and she couldn't get him to latch. And it was like, she like billed me and it was like $150. So I was just, I can't I can't keep paying you to come. So I was like, I guess I'll just pump. So I did successfully pump for 2 years, which was great. So we can get into like tips and tricks of how we successfully, because Jordan's almost a year into exclusively breastfeeding. I pumped for 2 years straight. And I think there's just so much that you can do to have a successful breastfeeding journey that we can get into at a later time. But I will say my number one tip right now before I forget it, do not quit on a bad day. Because every day was bad for me for 2 whole years. So I just never quit until my milk dried up.
When do you think like mentally you like turned a corner? Because like those first few weeks are mentally, I mean, like I know you had a tough mental few years, but postpartum mentals are different.
Maybe when I was, I'll be honest. The whole first 3 years was two and a half at least was really, really dark. But that was because my nervous system was out of whack. That wasn't a direct reflection of being a mom, even though becoming a mom was like really shocked me.
Yeah.
But I would say, I think once maybe he was like one and a half and like my boobs weren't constantly engorged and I wasn't, you know, so my boobs weren't sore and always full of milk. I think around then was when I was like, okay, like, I'm not going to ever do it again, but I don't want to die anymore.
Oh, gosh.
I'm saying this all with a grain of salt. Humor. Nothing, nothing had to do with being a mom. Mm-hmm. It was just my mental state. Like, the two things were not correlated.
Yeah.
Being a mom is my greatest joy, but it just looked nothing like I thought it would. But even then, so it was just my nervous system that was out of whack. So, if you're listening to this, like, don't let my story scare you because it had nothing to correlate with being a mom and how hard being a mom was, because I could handle that. It was just...
Obviously, you were surprised to become a mom, but... Sorry, I got distracted by my... I was like, what is that in the thing? Obviously, you were surprised to become a mom, but that's why it's important to do, like, nervous system work before, you know, getting pregnant and on top of all the hormone cascades and everything. But
But Jordan had a beautiful postpartum experience. So let's listen to Jordan's postpartum experience.
Well, I've actually been reflecting a lot on my postpartum because I'm almost a year postpartum. Mm-hmm. So I've been like thinking back a lot to it. And I've also been noticing a lot on social media, people talk about how horrible and difficult and scary it is, and it can be those things, but I don't think that has to be the norm. And I think we're like scaring women, like they're like going into it expecting this horrible experience and like anticipating it, and you know, you start to attract things that you are thinking about all the time, and I think it's making it worse for women to be like scared. It's like the same thing with birth, like Hollywood, all the movies, you see women, you know, so in so much pain and having these horrible birth experiences. And so, yeah, we're conditioned to think that, but it doesn't have to be like that. So, yeah, I've been thinking a lot about that. It's been really bothering me, actually, because
that was me. Wait, that is I made it 1,000 times worse. Like, within the first 2 months of finding out I was pregnant, I had the split thought of, like, oh, my gosh, I have to give birth. And then I just spiraled. And, like, I made it so much worse. I like was successfully had an unmedicated birth. I successfully had zero interventions. Like things went smoothly at birth, but it was me who just chalked it up to be like, I thought it was going to be a horrible experience. Mm-hmm. And I projected that onto myself. And same with postpartum. So many people scared me about postpartum and they would say, you know, if you breastfeed, your hormones are going to go crazy and you're not going to feel like yourself. So I was terrified of that happening. And then they would say, and when your milk dries up, you're going to have the same experience where your hormones go crazy. So that's one of the reasons I breastfed for so long, because I was terrified of my hormones going crazy. And I look back and I'm like, I manifested so many bad things for myself when really none of it actually was going to happen. So anyway, take it back away. But just if you're listening to this and you're scared, you don't have to be. Like, it can be a great experience.
Yeah.
Your imagination is making it 1,000 times worse than it's actually going to be.
Your imagination and I truly like social media. I mean, like we see these horrible things and it is super scary. And it's as someone who did not have a horrible at all experience postpartum, I'm like almost like embarrassed or scared to talk about how great it was because I'm going to make other women feel shamed when of course they shouldn't feel that way. But I want to share that like, this can be a really beautiful time. Like that newborn bliss bubble that people talk about is real and can totally happen. But like I did do a lot of preparing beforehand. Mm-hmm. Like, I had a support system ready. I knew my people were going to bring me meals. I was in a mentally good place going into pregnancy. And yeah, so I think if you have a plan and yeah, try to push out those negative thoughts, it can go really well. So what I did was the 5-5-5, which was 5 days in the bed, 5 days on the bed, and then 5 days around the bed. So like, plan to do absolutely nothing. Your body's healing physically, emotionally. It is a huge change. Like, hormones drop as soon as your placenta comes out. Your body's like, not pregnant anymore. And so, yeah, definitely have a plan. Freezer meals are great because then you don't have to worry about it unless you have people to bring you meals. And if you don't have people who are going to bring you meals, definitely do freezer meals. You don't want to have to worry about it. You don't want your husband to have to worry about it. Like, my husband took over everything, the meals, the pets, like, literally everything. I did not have to lift a finger. And I think that's super important. Like, the it takes a village thing is real. And like, women around the world get support. And for some reason in America, we're expecting women to just like get right back into their normal lives. And that's barbaric, truly. So yeah, just feel supported. I think unmedicated makes a big difference. You're actually, it's like a black box warning on epidurals. Like, you are at much higher risk for postpartum depression when you're drugged up and everything. And then you just keep telling yourself, getting to that 6 week point, like, it makes a huge difference. Your hormones are start to be a little more, I don't want to say normal, especially if you're breastfeeding, but like a little more even keeled. That 6 week mark was like a huge transformation for me. And I'm not going to act like I didn't have some dark thoughts. Of course I had some dark thoughts, but like, not till week three is when it was like probably my hardest. I had a hard few days in week three. And I was like, I was crying. At one point I remember thinking, oh, I get why like moms run away sometimes. But it was never anything dark, that dark or horrible. But that 6 week mark is like a huge transformation. Just, you turn a huge corner. Breastfeeding and skin to skin are both really protective against postpartum depression. And the baby blues are very normal to have a little bit of. It's just a big change. It's like a huge life change. And every baby you have, it's like a new version of you, you know. So, but yeah, it can be a really beautiful experience. And I was lucky, I gave birth in the summer. So I was outside, touching grass and drinking lots of water. You want to have minerals and good foods and just do nothing. I think so many women are just, I know my friend Erica listens to this podcast. I'm calling you out, Erica. She like goes to Costco the day after she gives birth. I'm like, who are you? Go sit down. Go sit down. But she has a great support system. She has lots of family, but yeah, I mean, just try to do nothing. And I think that's, people are just so quick to want to get back to normal life. And it's not the same life anymore, you know?
For sure. And also, that reminds me, we went to dinner. My son's dad, I like don't know, should I say his name? Should I not say his name? Whatever. Everyone knows Chase. But yeah. Anyway, he wanted to go to dinner, wanted to go get sushi. It was, I think, 2 days or a day after I got home from the hospital. I remember wanting to be normal again. So I was like, yeah, let's go get sushi. And I remember like trying to walk into the restaurant and sit down and just, I was in so much pain. And I think it honestly made me feel worse, not better, because I was trying to be so normal, but I couldn't surrender to my new normal, if that makes sense. So maybe if you're postpartum and you feel like, you know, I'm going out of the house and things aren't helping, maybe you just need more rest. Because I remember in that moment being like, yeah, I can't do this. Like, I want to go home and lay down because I'm in so much physical pain. So yeah, I think we live in a society that thinks we need to bounce back. We need to act like nothing happened. But really, postpartum is such a long journey. Yeah. And I think we as moms have to remember that, like Jordan said, like, this is you're a new version of yourself when you give birth. You're not the same person you were. And for so long, I wanted to go back to my old self. And the resistance of that just, I think, makes it all 10 times harder. I think when we make the decision to become moms, we have to also make the decision to become a new version of ourselves, because we will never be that past version of ourselves. And I think when we try to, we're sacrificing sometimes like our kids. I don't want to say our kids' mental health, but like, we're sacrificing, well-being. I don't know, yeah, how do I put it without, because I don't want to sound rude, but it's just being a mom is the ultimate sacrifice. And I think we have to be okay with becoming a new version of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be like the best version of you ever. It just is going to be different. And we also have to remember that motherhood is really hard. Like it's not supposed to be easy. And I think we try to take the easy way out, and we're conditioned to take the easy way out in every aspect of motherhood. And so it's like when it does feel a little bit hard, we think that we're doing something wrong, when really it's just meant to be hard. It's supposed to be a wave of like the, you know, you feel so fulfilled, but also you feel so drained. And motherhood is just the ultimate sacrifice. And I think if we're choosing to become moms, we're also choosing to become a new version of ourselves. And that's okay.
Yeah, totally. I agree with you. On the podcast we had with Samantha from Acres and Aprons, she said, she feels like people want babies, but they don't want to like raise children because like the babies are cute and fun and all that. But you're sacrificing yourself for, really forever. At some point you'll, you know, be an empty nester, but you're still always going to be worried about your children.
Even then, I think about my mom. My mom's oldest is 38. Her youngest is 30, which is me. And like, she still is like doing stuff for us. Yes, she is still like checking in. When my sister needs her, my mom will drop everything and go out to her. Like, you really don't get to stop being a mom once you become
a mom. I remember I texted you and I was like, I think I was like a few months into having a baby. And I was like, are we going to go through identity crisis when we're empty nesters? And you're like, I'm never going to be an empty nester. Yeah. Like, I will. Like, my life will be over.
Yeah, no, I never want to be an empty nester. I want to have kids like into my 40s. And then I'll still have kids at home when I'm 60. Like, that's ideal to me.
And then grandkids.
Yeah. Like, everyone always says, I can't wait till my kid's 18 and they're on there. Not me. I hope you stay home forever.
Yeah. Also, a good book to read about postpartum is The First 40 Days. That's really helpful. And they have like a meals plan thing in there too, which is really helpful. But yeah, I don't know if I would do anything different. I think I had the best postpartum.
You did. I think you thrived. I remember texting Larry and being like, I don't want to annoy Jordan if she's, because like you were newly-ish postpartum when we like started becoming really good friends. And I remember like asking Larry, is Jordan going to get overwhelmed if I'm texting her, like talking to her? And he's like, no, she wants you to. But like in my head, it didn't register that people have good postpartum experiences. So like I was scared to text you and like talk because I didn't want you to feel like it was a task to be looking at your phone if you're overwhelmed. But like you're just over there like doing
like,
your
please
thing.
Text me. Yeah. Like, yeah. Like, can I send having pictures fun. Of my baby to everybody? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's another thing I noticed too, is all the men talking to Larry before I gave birth. They were like, oh, your wife's going to be a bitch. Like, look out, you know, like it's going to be really hard for you because she's going to be so like unstable. But I mean, so I don't know. I don't know how that is for other men. It'd be interesting to hear from men about their wives' experience postpartum, but I don't remember one time yelling at him.
I think that's a direct reflection, though, of how much Larry did for you.
Yeah.
Because I think, like, even in my case, I felt so much resentment and just anger and hate because I felt like I was doing everything on my own. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a direct reflection of the husbands, not the wives.
Yeah. I mean, husbands need to prepare, too. I mean, really drill it into them how important and, like, fragile these times are. Like, I think women will always remember how they were treated those first few months. Like, they will look back in 80 years and remember who was nice to them. And
1,000%. I really try to forgive people. I will never forget, though, how people treated me when I was freshly postpartum. And I try to give grace because I'm like, these people didn't have kids yet. They had no idea. But I will never forget the things that people said about me and to me and how they treated me. And not that I'm not like the perfect person. I get it. But it's just so like ingrained into my head how people treated me back then that it's just like hard to not hold grudges. Yeah. Even if people didn't even realize they were, you know, being rude. It's just you're ultra sensitive in those times. Also, I just feel like, in the U.S., I was talking to my therapist about birth because I said I wanted to do home birth next. And she's like, yeah, I haven't done it, but all my friends do home births. And she's like, you should watch the documentary, and you've probably seen it, but it's called Babies, she said. Mm. And it's a documentary about three different countries. It's the US, it's Switzerland, and somewhere else. And she was talking about how medicalized birth in the US was compared to everywhere else. She's like, in Switzerland, they literally give you a box for you to go birth at home. Like, here's your supplies, go have your baby on your own at home. Whereas in the US, obviously, we're like in the hospital or in the OB's office every other day. We're getting epidurals, we're getting Pitocin, we're getting all the interventions. And it's just in other countries, they're like, yep, your body's capable, go give birth. It's not a medical emergency. It's just a part of life that happens. So it's just crazy how we're really set up to fail. So, you know, if you had a terrible postpartum birth, whatever, don't blame yourself. Blame our country.
Blame everybody else but you.
Don't take accountability. Blame it on everyone else.
Well, yeah. So that, I mean, the way how postpartum is too really sets us up for breastfeeding success as well, especially like in the hospital. I was actually just listening to a podcast this morning about breastfeeding, and we are in no way lactation consultants. So take all of this. This is just from our own understanding of things. But anyways, I was listening to it and they were saying how in the hospital, a lot of times, well, one, they're charging women. Did you know they charge women for skin to skin that first golden hour?
What?
They charge you because someone has to be in the room watching because those beds are so narrow, I guess, and high up that they like, it's like a risk if the baby falls or whatever. So they charge you for your golden hour. So they're so anti that skin to skin and, you know, getting baby on the breast right away. And they'll say things like, oh, they don't have to eat in the first 24 hours.
And at the, in the same breath, they're giving you baby formula because you're like, your milk's not coming in. It's not here. Use the formula.
Exactly. People don't understand no one teaches them. Well, first off, OBGYNs have no like breastfeeding training at all, which seems criminal. But skin to skin is like so vital. Like, even like don't shower for the first few weeks. Those smells and those hormones you're swapping with the baby are vital for breastfeeding. And so, yeah, people don't realize like how important it is like not to have clothes on the baby and wrap them up real tight and have them away from you. Literally, that oxytocin is needed for breastfeeding. Well, there's a lot of things that are needed for breastfeeding, but it's crazy how, yeah, we're not set up in a system to support breastfeeding. And I think also the formula industry is so like predatory. Like they just prey on not having our milk come in. Oh, like you're pumping, you're not getting anything. Oh, here, you need a dual, what do they call it? What is it called?
Combo like, feed?
Combo feeding. Yeah, you need a combo feed because you got to just top your baby off after they leave the boob.
Yeah. And they don't realize that the baby's stomach when they're first born is itty bitty, teeny tiny. They barely need anything, but they're telling moms like, oh, your milk's not in. You got to give the formula. Here's this pre-made Similac bottle. Like, yeah.
And it's so common for your milk to not come in for three to like 5 days. Like that's how long it can take after birth for your milk to come in.
Yeah, come into like 5 days. I remember being like, is this ever going to come in?
Yeah.
It was legitimately like 5 days.
I gave birth on a Monday morning and Friday was when my milk came in. You have that colostrum coming. Mm-hmm. Well, then that's the problem too. People feel like they need a pump because like they're going to have to go back to work and then they're pumping and they're like seeing I'm not getting a lot because like, your baby doesn't need that much right away or it's like not in yet.
We also, when they think that, oh, the baby keeps wanting to nurse, I'm probably not getting anything out, like the baby's starving, but it's like, no, they're just doing it for comfort. And babies are so smart. They're telling your brain, hey, I'm born, let the milk come in.
Yes.
Like the babies are meant to be on your boob 24/7. I was trying to explain this to Joey today. Like the first three-ish months, if you can get a solid, whether you're pumping, whether you're exclusively pumping or breastfeeding, if you can make it those first 3 months, you can do it for as long as you want. Like, but you have to get a good milk schedule because every time you decide to, oh, I'm just going to give a bottle of formula, which whatever, if that's your choice, that's your choice. You need to also be pumping at the same time because then it's telling your brain, hey, the baby didn't need to eat as much today. We can slow down and not make as much milk.
Yeah.
And that's where moms get screwed because they're like, well, I'm not making enough milk anymore. But you need to just have the baby like continuously latched. And mm-hmm. I feel like those first 3 months, yeah, it sucks. It was hard. My boobs were raw. I was waking up every 2 hours to pump on demand. Like it was terrible, but what an amazing gift I got to give my son to breastfeed for 2 years. I just had to suck up those couple months. And I will say, this is like a tough love thing. So if you don't want to hear it, you don't have to listen to it. But I was telling myself, it doesn't matter how hard I'm struggling with my mental health, I'm not going to jeopardize my son's health in making it easier on mm-hmm. me. And that was my, that is what carried me through. Like, no matter, even though like I'm barely hanging on, I feel like I, you know, I was in such a mentally dark place. It was just, my son has nothing to do with that. So I'm going to keep doing this for him, because the two are not, the two truly are not correlated. My life isn't easier just because I'm going to give formula. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like I was just, I had to give, I knew about breastfeeding, or I knew how good breast milk was. And it was like, I couldn't sacrifice his health. Yeah. And I'm not trying to sound rude or insensitive, but it just is, we have to get okay with knowing the facts that breast milk is very superior to formula.
Yeah.
And it was just ingrained in my head. Like, I have to keep doing this for my son. And it's the ultimate sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Motherhood is the ultimate sacrifice. And I was willing to just put my mental health aside and just suck it up and do it, because I knew mm-hmm. eventually I was probably going to get out of the dark place. And I did. And look at me now. Mm-hmm. It's just in those moments, it feels like it's, you know, never ending and you're never going to feel like yourself again. But you just have to kind of surrender to the suck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amen. Also, you brought up how the baby's on the boob a lot, like cluster feeding. They're telling your body to make the milk and get your milk in. So like, I think people get annoyed or they think something's wrong, like they're hungry, but no, that's nature doing its thing, which is crazy. I think they say it takes about 6 weeks to get your milk like regulated. So those first 6 weeks are vital. Like, don't do pacifiers because you're going to mess up hunger cues and all that. Don't do pacifiers for those first 6 weeks. So it's, breastfeeding is supply and demand. So if your baby's on, your body's going to be producing. So that's, it's super important. That's why it's important to sleep by your baby. So at night, you're not missing those night feeds. And
you know what's funny is everyone's always like, don't let them use you as a pacifier. You are, we are the original pacifier. Yeah. What do you think our boobs are for?
Yeah.
Like that, we are the pacifier. We have just,
it's emotional regulation. Yeah. It's not just eating too. It's a lot of things.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, I didn't shower for like legit like 3 weeks because I was like, I need her to smell me. I was like,
you guys smelled like a rotten fish.
I smelled so bad, but it was like fun. Like sometimes I'd smell my armpits and I'd have a letdown. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Wow. Like that's my body like communicating with me. That's cool. Like thinking I'm smelling her, but
yeah, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild. Yeah, I didn't do any of the stuff you're. Like, next baby, I will not bathe them for weeks or even, you know, a month. I will not shower right away.
Mm-hmm.
But I just didn't know any of these things. Like, they used Johnson & Johnson on Barrett the day after he was born. It just, and they put the hat on him mm-hmm. right when he came out. They mm-hmm. took him from me and went to measure him. And I remember thinking, like, can't this wait?
Yeah.
But, like, I didn't know better, so no I hats. Didn't speak up. Yeah.
No, hats are important. They're, like, releasing hormones from mm-hmm. their head. Like, we don't just like to smell our babies because it smells good. It's, like, a nature thing.
Yeah, for sure.
It's crazy. My baby, she's going to be a year in a few weeks, and she's never once had soap on her body. People's mouths are probably going to drop, but no soap. I mean, it's just not necessary.
Yeah.
She's never been caked in, you know, dog shit or anything, so it's, like, just not necessary.
Yeah, and I will say, because I wasn't crunchy right when I had Barrett, but I do distinctly remember being like, I shouldn't be using soap. And I just never used lotions because I was just, it just inherently felt wrong. Like, why would I lather mm-hmm. something on my baby's skin? And then it's going to, I just kept picturing it like soaking into his skin. And I was like, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't want to do that. So we never did lotions. We never did the baby oils. Honestly, in my opinion, I feel like that's just more for like the moms and the dads. You're like, oh, the baby smells so good because I'm putting all these things on it, but it's like not doing the baby any good. I would
not
hold off on all of those things.
At least for 6 months. Because, I mean, we absorb like 60% of what goes on our skin. Imagine putting all those chemicals on a little teeny baby.
Yeah. And not to offend anyone because I did the same with Barrett. I was using soaps. But then once he turned like 2 months is when my like crunchy mom sensor started going off. And I stopped using soaps like completely. Mm. I just never used them because I was just like, why would I use soap? It's not like he's dirty. Yeah. So you live and you learn.
Another thing too, I knew that I wanted to breastfeed. That was my plan. And if you've done your research and you decided it's not for you, whatever, that's fine. But if you are set on breastfeeding, don't have formula just in case, you know, because that can be a really quick, like, I'm just going to give them a little just because, like, I know it's, like, normal to be told to top them off. But, like, if you don't have it in the house, you can't do it. You know, you're going to be.
And same with when you go into your pediatricians, if you're going to a pediatrician, when you go in and then they measure and they say, oh, you should supplement with formula because they're falling off the growth chart.
Mm-hmm.
Whose growth chart?
Mm-hmm.
Because if your baby is trending on their own growth chart, that's perfectly fine. But every time I took Barrett to the pediatrician from newborn until he was like 6 months, they always told me, you need to supplement with formula. He's not growing on pace.
Yeah.
But then I was like, okay, but is he growing on his own? Like, is he still getting bigger each time he comes? And they're like, well, yeah, but he's just really small. Okay, that's okay. Most babies are like formula fed, massive babies. That is not mine. And now look at him. He's six. He's thriving. He's the healthiest, smartest kid I know. But I just remember them telling me like, yeah, you need to be supplementing with formula. And I just never did it. I was just like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And I remember them telling me like, okay, get this formula, mix this many ounces of water with the formula, and then add the breast milk. And I remember wanting to say, like, you guys are really wasting your time telling me all these things, so I'm not going to do it. And then I just never did it because it didn't feel right. My mom sensors were just like, yeah, that's not what we're going to do. People need to lean into their mom intuition more, for sure, instead of just listening to whatever their pediatrician tells them. And again, it's not your fault. We're just conditioned to. But like, if you really just pause and let your intuition take over, you're going to have the right answer for your baby, because your doctor who sees your baby maybe 10 minutes every couple months does not know your baby better than you do.
Yeah. Agreed. Amen. I was actually on the podcast I was listening to today, it was an IBCLC talking, but she said that actually formula, if someone for whatever reason is having a hard time breastfeeding, like they just got bad advice or whatever, blah, 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 formula can actually be a little tool to help initiate breastfeeding again. Because if the baby was like too small and weak and like not growing, they're not eating. So like those extra calories can help them actually have the energy to learn to latch back on. So I thought that was interesting how it can actually be very a helpful tool sometimes, but definitely not a crutch like most people I think use it as.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, I don't know. Super interesting. She also said the starting rate for breastfeeding is really high in America. It's like over 90% or something, but it falls off after like 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you can just embrace the suck of the first 3 months, you can breastfeed for as long as you want. But I think everyone's just so used to it. And I remember telling like my family, just venting, not even looking for a solution, but just venting. And everyone was like, just do formula. It's fine. You're not a bad mom. And it's like, I know I'm not a bad mom if I give formula, but that's not what I want to do. I want someone to tell me like, yeah, it sucks, but you're going to get through it and you're going to be able to get past it. Or offer solutions to someone like, hey, check out this Instagram page. Hey, you know, give people resources, not just, just switch to formula. It's okay.
Yeah.
Because so many of my friends have regretted switching to formula, and then they get out of the trenches and they're like, I wish I would have just stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, just embrace the suck. It's just a season, a small season.
Yeah.
Our babies are only babies for literally 12 months of their entire lives. We just have to embrace it.
It gets so much easier. And also be prepared. My midwife was an IBCLC, and that's what a thing that attracted me to her. Have one ready. Mm-hmm. Look up your local La Leche League. They're usually free, and they will help you get there. They have a great book, La Leche League, too. But I try to avoid the hospital ones. They're just a little more formula happy, I guess. But definitely have resources available. That's a good thing to put on your registry, is money towards a lactation consultant. Definitely be prepared.
Go into it with a plan.
Yeah, have a plan. Just like postpartum. Yeah. I think people who pump, like you, that was badass, because that looks hard. I've never once pumped. I mean, I had a hand pump for like relief sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't pumped in probably like 8 months. But cleaning it seems so daunting, all of that. But if you're like just on the boob, it is probably 10 times easier than pumping. And I get you probably have to go to work, most people, but if you can avoid pumping too, it's way less intimidating.
For sure. And I think that also goes with just being okay. Because I know a lot of people are like, well, I don't want them always on my boob. I want to be able to go out and do things. And I get that to an extent. But it's like also, it's just motherhood. The first year is just really just sacrificing your own fun and your own self to just be able to like breastfeed and feed on demand and all the things. But also I get people have to go into work. I had to go into work. So before anyone says like, this is out of touch, this episode is out of touch. I was back in the office at 6 weeks. So if anyone gets it, I get it. I had to pump every 2 hours literally at my work. And then I would pump on my way home from work. I would pump on my way to the office. I was pumping like 6 times during the day just because I knew if I didn't keep up with Barrett's, how often Barrett was eating at daycare, I knew my supply wouldn't last. So also, can we normalize not having an oversupply? So many people.
So bad.
I feel like that's all I see on TikTok is moms who like fill the freezer fulls and fill the
fridge. Do not have to feed the freezer.
Yeah. It's just that's so not obtainable. And I went from being a just enougher, like just being able to feed Barrett and that was it. I didn't have anything extra to being an oversupplier to being just enougher. And then to like at the very end, I was like, I am not making as much milk anymore. It's just it ebbs and flows. And just because you're making just, I think it scares mom to make just as much as baby's eating, but like I did that for almost two years. Like it's very doable. It's just I think internet.
People feel like they need to have a big supply in the freezer just in case, like an emergency or something. But an oversupply can cause a lot of issues for you and the baby too. I mean, like reflux and all this sort of stuff. Like, and it's a lot. It's not normal. It's not a flex, I guess. Yeah, an oversupply.
And this goes back to like people thinking they need to have an oversupply so that they can go out and leave baby at home. But isn't that just a sign that we should just be with baby for that first year or bringing them with us? Like that is just a mindset switch we have to have, I think.
And if you're not pumping, if you choose not to pump, you have an excuse for like no one to be able to take the baby out for a walk or something, or like hold them like, no, oh, gotta breastfeed and sorry. Like it's just a super easy golden ticket to get out of things.
That is something I told Joe I'm looking forward to again, is using a baby as an excuse to not go do things or to like get to leave places early. Like that, I remember with Barrett, that just being my jam. Up until like 3 years old, it was always just, Barrett's ready to go or
nap time.
Barrett's taking a nap. Mind you, my kid literally would sleep anywhere, slept in the car, slept out in public. But, you know, it's just, it's nice to use a baby as an excuse to get out of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Amen. I mean, we don't really do a whole lot of stuff anyway, but
just in case you did.
Larry definitely uses Romy all the time for an excuse.
That's hilarious. Okay, should we, do you feel like we covered the grounds for, okay, do you want to talk about your miscarriage?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, because I've been getting some messages about people who went through a similar thing. So I felt like I should share, because when I went through it, all I wanted to do was hear about other people. I wanted to like, I guess not feel alone. Like I knew it happened to other women. Like I know the stats, like 1 in 4 women, but like to hear other people's stories was really comforting. So I got pregnant. Whoa, what year is it right now?
2025, baby.
Whoa.
You got to be pregnant in 2023, right?
Wait, what?
When did you get pregnant?
Yeah.
2023, right? End of
2023. Wow. Whoa, yeah. So I got pregnant.
Yeah.
The beginning of 2023 with my first pregnancy. Okay. Yeah. Yes. So I got pregnant in, I think I found out February 1st I was pregnant. And then I think I miscarried the day after my husband's birthday. So March 22nd. So I was about 10 weeks along when I miscarried, but I knew the baby had stopped growing around 7 weeks. Actually, I was telling Kate this. I knew when I found out I was pregnant, like that was not going to be a successful pregnancy. Obviously, I was excited and I told people and I went along like it would, but I just like, I think I just knew in my core. I had the most vivid dream that I was pictured the miscarriage, like holding it in my hand. And that dream like legit actually happened when I did miscarry. It was crazy. It was the most vivid thing. My friend Erica, who's now been talked about twice on this podcast, she had a wedding planned for like a month before I was due. And I just knew I was going to be at that wedding. I was going to fly up to watch. Like, I just knew in my core I was going to be there. So, yeah, I wasn't surprised when I found out I miscarried, but I was devastated. I mean, I'm still very much hurt. But I, yeah, so I went in for an ultrasound around 10 weeks because I started spotting and I wasn't going to do any ultrasounds until the anatomy scan. And I had been spotting for a few days and it just wasn't getting better. And I was like, I just know, like, I lost this baby and I just wanted to confirm. So I went in and it had stopped growing around 7 weeks. So I went about like three and a half weeks carrying around my baby that had passed. And I know a lot of people in the hospital are told right away to take this pill, do a DNC, and your body, like a month, they start to freak out, they freak out if it's been a few days, but I just knew like, I'm just going to do this naturally at home. It's still like a birthing process. And so I started immediately taking a black cohosh tincture. I did that 3 times a day until the bottle was gone. And so let's say I started spotting on Wednesday, and then on Sunday was when I miscarried at home. And it started with just like bleeding. And then it was like pouring out of me.
Oh my
gosh. I remember
I
kept running to the bathroom and running to the living room and asking Larry, like, does my skin look okay? Like, do I look green? Because I felt like I was like losing so much blood. And I couldn't tell if it was my anxiety or if I was getting like, you know, lightheaded. It was more blood than when I actually gave birth to a full term baby. But, yeah, big clots. I knew I wanted to like catch the remains, as like morbid as that sound. I didn't want to just like flush my baby. So I like put a little like sieve, like filter thingy in the toilet and caught my baby. And there was like a placenta and like, sorry, it was really graphic.
Now I'm just like crying.
I know, it's really sad. I'm trying not to cry. This is my first time not crying when I'm talking about this. But yeah, so I just remember walking out. Now I'm going to cry, like saying to Larry, like, okay, like I passed the baby. And blood was still just pouring out of me. I didn't have any pads or tampons or anything, which I would never put anything up when trying to release everything. But there was no pain or anything. Like, I know people say their miscarriages were really painful, but I think that's probably something to do with the medical side of it. So no pain, but I went and bought a plant and I buried it in a plant that I'll have forever, a ponytail palm, because I was convinced it was a girl. And so I got a little ponytail palm, but yeah, it was very bloody. And I remember getting in the shower. I remember my friend told me her sister got in the shower to make herself like feel better. And it just made it look like there was so much more blood. And I started freaking out. So I got out of the shower and I just cried. I cried so hard for probably like a week straight. And I just, yeah, I treated that like a postpartum too. I just sat on the couch and cried and watched trash TV and vegged out. And like, I just like, no one knows what to say to someone who's been through it or is going through it. And so I just felt like no one wanted to really talk to me, because unless I noticed my friends who had a miscarriage were the ones that were reaching out the most. And yeah, it's like, I mean, what do you say? I guess now that I've been through it, don't know what I would say to someone, but definitely text your friends who are going through it. But yeah, it was horrible. I don't wish that on my worst enemy. And I really did a lot of blaming of myself. Not like, oh, I didn't eat the right things because I knew I was super healthy. But like, I remember I was so, and we've talked about gender disappointment before, but I was so sad that I thought it was a girl that I was like, maybe I was so sad that like I caused the miscarriage, you know? Oops. And so, yeah, that was hard for me to let go of that thought. But anyways, so
I can't. Yeah, I just can't even imagine.
Yeah, it was really hard because that was like a baby we very much wanted.
Yeah.
But
and I think nobody even thinks about that when, you know, they're first planning a family. That's never in your anticipation.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It's like you think like, oh, it can happen because you see it happen, but like,
but it would never happen to me, you know?
It was like, because I'm like, I'm so healthy and I do all the right things. And
for sure. Yeah, that's so how do people decide or like, what was your, when they need to go to the hospital to do a DNC or to take the pill or like, how do people decide that?
I don't think people do. I think people go in for early ultrasounds and then they see they've miscarried. And so it's just like right away, people want to take action. Yeah. Doctors will say, you know, oh, you have to do this because it'll go septic and like get an infection and whatever. But like our bodies know what to do. Our bodies are designed to do it. I think mine took almost a month to come out. And I think my body just wasn't ready to let go of it or like just needed that time to do it. And I would have gone in if, I mean, I think I bled for exactly 2 weeks.
Wow.
And it wasn't a lot of bleeding. It was like a very light period. But I think I would have gone in if I was in pain. You know what I actually did do a week later was I went back to the ultrasound place and I had her make sure everything came out. If something was missing, if something was still in there, I would have gone and taken a pill probably. But I just ate a lot of nourishing foods and I still did all the things I would do if I was postpartum. And I got, you know what, I got my period back exactly like 30 days later.
Wow.
Which I know is uncommon for a lot of people, but I think it's because I let my body deal with things naturally.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, I got pregnant, let's see, with my daughter now 7. That happened at the end of March. And I got pregnant mid-October, I think 7 months. And I think a lot of factors went into that, too. I did acupuncture. I was doing, like, all the things to heal my body. I'm also pretty convinced, like, that miscarriage happened for, obviously, a horrible reason, but, like, still a reason. Like, I think I was just meant to have baby I have now.
Yeah.
And also, my grandma died. And then the next cycle was when I got pregnant with Romy. So I'm like, okay, that was, like, a gift from my grandma. And
yeah, for sure.
So
when did you start trying again?
I you know, people say to like give yourself a few months, I think, but my body was having healthy periods and I felt ready mentally. And so I started trying right away, but I noticed I became obsessive because I was like, I need to like get pregnant again, you know?
Yeah.
And then I was scared that like I wouldn't be able to get pregnant again.
Right.
And then I became like manic about it and I really just needed to chill, which is so much easier said than done. But I was taking anxiety tincture too through that whole thing. Can't remember what it was called, by Herb Farm, but it's like their anxiety one. But I think that really helped me a lot.
Yeah, I think people don't realize, and I didn't either, because Jordan had to calm me down last month. Like, it's actually hard to get pregnant.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
Your odds of actually getting pregnant are way less than not getting pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
I had to think about how what I was saying.
And I got pregnant pretty quick. That first time, it was took like 3 months, I think. But yeah, the second time was 7 months. But like, it's hard. It's hard to get pregnant.
Yeah. 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 Jordan really eased my mind when she was like explaining. Obviously, a baby is a blessing. I don't ever want people to think I don't want a baby because I do want a baby eventually. But last month, I was just so thrown off because we were not trying. I just didn't track my ovulation correctly. Anyway.
Yeah.
We had sex like 5 days, like the first day into ovulation. And I was panicking.
Yeah.
But Jordan was like, no, Mary Kate, like, I don't think you understand how hard it is to get pregnant. But all I was thinking was when I had Barrett, like, we weren't trying. I got pregnant immediately. So, like, that was all, like, I was just having like a PTSD reaction. But anyway, yeah, it is hard to get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're not getting pregnant the first, even like a year, it's okay. Like it's that's normal. Isn't it technically normal to take up to a year?
Yeah. And they say a healthy couple can take a year. But, and I think people, it's because when we start trying for a baby, it's like you really want a baby when you're trying.
Yeah.
And so that year feels long and daunting. Mm. So yeah, it can be really scary when you're not getting pregnant. That's like all you want. And everybody else around you is getting pregnant. And
yeah. Well, and also I just like thinking of, okay, so you get your period and you're like, oh, I have to wait until the next month to try. And then I have to wait the 2 weeks to see if it happened. And that I just feel like that could be so much on a person who's like trying.
Yeah. After I had the miscarriage and then I wanted to start trying again, I felt like I was like living my life in 2 week increments.
Yeah.
Like, you know, tracking and, and I truly became obsessive. So yeah, I was in therapy at the time, but yeah, I wasn't in a good place mentally, but, I don't wish that experience on anybody, but it does happen and you are not alone. And so I remember I joined a Facebook group, people who went through miscarriages, and I was in there for a few days and it did make me feel better. But then some of the stories were horrible and I was just I don't want to be this sad every day reading these. And so
you're on Facebook? Why aren't we friends?
I don't know. Are we not friends?
I'll add you on Facebook after
this. Don't post on Facebook, but I love a good Facebook group.
So. Yeah. I don't post really either, unless it's like my Fox News clips. Yeah. Just to let my hometown know.
I made it. I almost said a bad word right there.
All my old teachers, all my old coaches who always, you know, gave me a hard time for being not a good student.
I never post. We should start a Facebook group.
Not we should. That group. Would be fun. Yeah. Let's do it. Let us know. If we should start a Facebook group. Maybe we'll make it a thing. You'd have to be the admin, though. I'm not good at that.
I will do it, but I want rules. Like,
okay.
If you're not crunchy, get the fuck
out. Yeah.
No, because, like, I don't want people coming in saying, like, take your kid to the doctor right now for that ear infection, you know?
For sure.
Yeah, there's got to be guidelines. Groups.
Yeah, guidelines. That's why I actually got out of all of my crunchy groups once I became truly crunchy, because I was like, what? These people.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that would make me the most mad was when people would talk about vaccines, like how they're so necessary. I'm like, how are you going to look at the food side of things and do the research and just neglect to look at the vaccine side?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I won't go on my spiel, but anyway, is there anything else we want to add to this episode? This was a good one.
It was a good one. I haven't cried that hard in a while. I don't think so.
Yeah, me either. I feel like this was a good one.
Yeah, it was a good one. Okay.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. See you next week.
Okay, bye. That's it for today's episode of Moms Unbothered. If this conversation made you think differently, question the norm, or even just feel a little more empowered in your health journey, do us a favor. Share this with another mom who needs to hear it.
If you're loving the show, the best way to support us is by leaving a quick review, subscribing, and connecting with us on social media. It helps us reach more moms who are ready to take back control of what goes on, in, and around their families. We'll be back next week with another conversation, but until then, trust your instincts, question to everything, and stay unbothered.